Good afternoon, everyone. My name is DJ and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 3rd, 2005. If I keep doing what I've been doing for the last few years, I'll have 8 years on July 3rd. My home group is called Bread and Roses. It's a men's stag meeting in Pacific Palisades, California. My sponsor name is Russell S. He has 20-something years of sobriety. This is a big deal for me. I want to thank, again, like last night and today, I want to thank all those who invited me, the Vicky Park committee, for selecting me to come out here to carry the message of change, experience, strength, and hope. And again, those who have commitments, thank you for setting up for us. And this is such a fabulous time. You know, I was telling my wife, we get a chance to have two summers, you know, one here and then one back home when we go home. So this is a big deal. I've never had summer in wintertime, basically, you know, where I'm from. But this is amazing. And you guys have treated us like family. And this is my tribe. This is my family right here. You guys are my family. And thank you. I really do appreciate that for opening up your hearts and these rooms. It's such a big deal for me. So thank you. I appreciate that. And if you look around, this is actually a beautiful hall right here. This hall is like gorgeous, you know. And but let me tell you about what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. When we give ourselves this program, like we gave ourselves to drugs and alcohol or whatever it might have been, you know, life can become different. And I guarantee you, you know, the man you see in front of you now is a totally, totally different man from what I used to be like. I am a product of you. It's pretty wild. I forgot to bring something with me, but I do have a smaller copy of it. And let me show it to you. Let me see if I can show it, if I have it still. Well, I don't want to waste too much time on that, but I have, it's my, I usually take, I have a gigantic picture. It's 16 by 20. It's what I used to be like. It's my prison ID card. And I have that. And I look at it every day and saying, I am one drink away from going back. And when I get a chance to speak with newcomers, and I tell the newcomer, the only difference between you and I is I got a few more days sobriety than you. Just a few more days sobriety than you. I said, but to the newcomer, I said, what we both have in common, we are both one drink away. So to newcomers, I do not want you to feel uncomfortable because somebody has, you know, 2 years, 20 years, one day, you're both one drink away. We're all one drink away. And today I want to talk about powerlessness and how life can become unmanageable. My life is totally unmanageable from what it used to be like. You know, my life is fabulous now. I struggle, but I continue to progress. Because why? I'm not afraid to pick up that phone. I will call you and say, how do you do this? Man, I'm going through this right here. Because when you're new, when I'm new, I don't know how to feel, operate off emotions. You know, I'm egotistical. You know, I'm a man, and I feel that if I can't show you weakness, who do I open up to? Because I have a problem with trust, especially from family, especially from friends, especially from I thought that I can trust God, but I can trust God, and I can trust family, and I can trust my friends. I can trust you. The things I talk about to you is I cannot talk about to my homeboys. I can't talk about when I was in prison. I couldn't talk about things that affected me, which I was put me in fear. You know, because when I'm in fear, I think different. I feel different. I look at the world different when I'm in fear. But I have a fundamental belief in the higher power, which was big as a mustard seed at the time. And so when I'm in fear, and I have that muscle seed. When I focus, like the big book says, we focus on something, the solution increases. When we focus on frustration, our frustration increases. But when we focus on solution, the solution is given to us. So when when that fear is inside of me, and because of that fundamental belief in faith in higher power, that fear fights to stay alive. That fear fights to stay alive. And it tells me, you can do this. You can do that. You don't need them. I've been with you so many years. I've taken you through, you know, through rough times in your life. I've taken you through this prison sentence. I've taken you through all this. That's my disease, it says. And when I listen to my disease say, I got you to myself now. I finally got you. And what happened is, I'm gonna spiral down again. I had to be broken down to my lowest common denominator. You know, when I talk about money, property, and prestige, not to sound egotistical, but I was a young man, and my business that I was doing, I accumulated a lot of stuff. And that was, you know, that was my ego, that was my pride. But when it was all taken away, I had nothing but me. As Shasta said, I was stuck with me. All my worldly possessions were taken away. And this is how I believe that the spirituality of this program comes into play. Who are you really? Who am I really? When all my external things are removed from me. And I'm just stuck with DJ. You know. Then I gotta go to step two. You know. And then I gotta do step three. But the hardest part for an alcoholic, when you self-search, leveling of pride, confessions of shortcomings, is the part when, doing this fourth step, I have to, this is the cause, this is what it affects, my part in it, right? My part in it. And the funny thing about it is, when I can blame you, and I can blame the causes, and I can blame what it affects. I can fill those columns up. I can write a book about this. But when it comes to my part in it, there was none when I first looked at it. You know? It's your fault, man. It's not me. You know? It's people, places, things, circumstances, situations. It's not DJ. But when I really, really looked at it, and what my part in everything was, that was relief. If I never sold drugs, I never would have went to prison. It affected my freedom. It affected my pocketbook. It affected my family. It affected me spending half my life locked in a cage, basically. And then I got to tell this to somebody, the shortcomings. I got to tell it to my sponsor. We gotta sit down. We gotta drink some ginger beer, you know. And we're gonna smoke cigarettes, and we're gonna talk this. And I'm gonna tell you everything. I'm going to reveal everything about me to you. I'm gonna tell you everything, because we're only sick as our secrets. I'm gonna tell you everything about me, and I'm going to be grateful, and I'm gonna uncover, discover, and I'm gonna discard all this stuff. When I went to prison, they didn't have laptops. They didn't have cell phones. The internet did not exist. And so when I get out, I had to learn about computers and the internet. And when you're on the internet so much, and you're on the computer so much, you have all these different files, right? So it runs kind of slow. So you have to do this thing called defrag. That's what we did. We had to defrag. We had to clean all this stuff up. And when I told my sponsor for 4 hours and revealed everything for 4 hours to my sponsor, he just looked at me like you're looking at me right now and said, "Is that it? Is that it?" So what happened for me was, I can trust you. My brothers in recovery, I can trust you. You guys are going to teach me how to build a family, but I have to build one within myself first. And my life started becoming totally different. I'm struggling, but I'm progressing. Struggling, but progressing. My deeply ingrained negative thoughts were being uncovered. I started discovering them, and I started discarding them. I'm a drunk, man. I'm an ex-con. I have a high school education. Life started getting a little difficult because why? I could not find a job. There's a story that I wrote in one of my books I wrote, and I'm out of prison, and I gotta man up. I have to man up. I gotta support myself to my own contribution. That means you can't sell drugs, you know? You gotta go get you a job, you know? You gotta learn how to pay taxes, you know? So they give me a job driving a truck. I ain't drove a car in 17 years, you know? And they want me to drive a truck. And, you know, and they gave me this thing called a cell phone. Didn't know how to use it. And so they told me to go get gas. It took me 3 hours to go get gas. I got lost. So I'm really frustrated. So I come back to the shop and say, this is not going to work out. And they said, yeah, it's not going to work out. They gave me like $50 and said, you take care of yourself. So I'm really, really upset with myself. You know, I began to talk myself out of this. This is for squares. Working is for squares. My disease tells me you need to do what you usually do. You know, because you can't work like this. You can't survive like this. This is when my disease is starting to tell me again, because why? I am new. I have limited experience, and I don't know how to deal with emotions and frustrations, newcomers. So I'm sitting, it's hot, it's a hot summertime, so I'm walking across the street and I'm really upset. And said, this is not going to work for me. This is not going to work for me. I walk across the street, traffic is going by, and something, you know, shoots by my head. I'm standing next to a bus stop, and there's these flower bushes right here. And I'm sitting there looking, and it's a hummingbird. See, what my brain is telling me when I was crossing that street is, forget it. Your homeboys were there for you. You can go get this money. I'm poor. I don't have anything. I'm barely getting by. I'm not used to this. But this is how my higher power works. The hummingbird came right here and it took me out of my head. And this is you guys. The hummingbird is you guys. And I'm sitting there looking at this hummingbird, and the hummingbird's going. It's going from flower to flower to flower to flower. It's looking for it. And I'm sitting there watching this hummingbird, and the hummingbird is doing what a hummingbird does. And all of a sudden it found it. And it sat right there, and it took all the nectar it needed to go. And it seemed like it looked at me and said, see? All you gotta do is be persistent, and you know? I could have sworn that the hummingbird looked at me and said this, and the hummingbird flew away. And I looked at myself, at the reflection on the bus stop window, and said, DJ, you will become a hummingbird. You will be persistent. You will find out what you're looking for. If it doesn't happen for the first couple of times, you will continue to grow. You will continue to go. You will continue to look for it. And I did. It took me a lot of time, but I finally found me a job. And I called my sponsor, and he said, the only thing you're looking for is one person to say yes. He said, but the fact of the matter is that you use the tools that we've given you in order to build a beautiful life. The tools that you guys gave me in these rooms to build a beautiful life. Because what he said, man, if you give yourself to this program, I guarantee it, man, God will give you more than what you ever expected. But it's not for that. God, when I say God is giving me more than I ever expected, he's giving me my self-esteem back through you. He gave me my self-efficacy back through you. He gave my self-worth back to you, from you, through you guys. If it wasn't for you guys, I would not be here now. I would be back in the penitentiary with a life sentence this time. Because I don't go to jail for a year. I don't do years. I do decades. And I'm not useful in there. and I'm not useful in there. So now, what happens is now, is when we began to do these steps of this program of recovery, I don't like being told what to do sometimes. And like I said, my sponsor is a little man, and Liz, she's a little woman. And, you know, I'm thinking I'm saying some real, real spiritual stuff. And me and Liz are driving her car. And she look at me and say, shut up. You don't know nothing. You a newcomer. You ain't got nothing to say. When we go to this meeting, what I want you to do is I want you to go set them chairs up, because you don't know nothing. And when the meeting is over, I want you to stack the chairs up again and put them back and mop the floor. That's what you know. Well, miss, you don't know how to live, but we're going to teach you how to live, baby. She throw the baby in there, you know, to make me feel good, you know. Okay, baby. I love that woman, you know. But this is what I was surrounded myself in. See, you guys came to me and showed me a prerequisite of what life can be like. But he said, if you want this, you got to come with us. You got to make your effort. This got to be your priority. So after that, once my sponsor and I went through the steps, I got to start making amends. I made amends to myself. I made amends to my family. Now, where I grew up at, the streets weren't like the way they are. People have bars on their windows. People are in the prisons of their own making. People have bars on their doors and their windows. It wasn't like that when I was growing up. And so when I'm out and I'm looking around and I see all the old folks that I used to take pomegranates off their trees and run, and oranges and run, you know, they're older now. They're almost 20 years older now. And the first thing I gotta do is, it hurt me right here. I hurt right here. And what I had to do was, I told my sponsor, I said, Russ, this is on my list, what do I do? I said, because my neighborhood is the way it is, I had a part in that. He said, you want to make amends, man? He said, what you're going to do is you're going to knock on everybody's door. Tell them who you are and why you're here. So Mrs. Williams, I knocked on Mrs. Williams' door. Hello, Miss Williams. I'm like, hello. I said, yeah, I'm Kathy's boy. Oh, yeah, how are you doing? I said, I'm doing well. I said, you know, why are you here? I said, I'm here to apologize. She said, for what? I said, because you have bars on your windows, you know, and I help contribute to you putting bars on your windows because of the things I used to do, me and my homeboys, and I want to say that I apologize for that. And she said, what are you doing now? I said, I'm helping others. I'm being a service to others. And she said, continue to do that. Thank you for your part in apologizing. Oh, that was pretty easy. Let me go to Miss Tucker's house. Hello, Miss Tucker. How you doing? Aren't you Kathy's boy? Like, yeah. So, what are you doing? I said, I haven't seen you in a long time. I said, yeah, I just got out of prison. So, how much time do you do? I said, almost 17 years. She's like, oh, baby. She said, what are you here for? I said, I'm here to apologize. She said, for what? I said, because I help contribute to making the neighborhood unsafe. She said, why are you here? I said, I want to apologize because now you lock yourself in the prison of your own making, and I want to apologize for that, you know, of doing that. She said, what are you doing now? I said, I'm helping others. I'm being a service. My life is totally different. She said, okay, continue to do that. Okay, I'm on the road now. I'm on the road. Now it's time to go to Mr. Johnson's house. Hello, Mr. Johnson. How you doing? I'm Kathy Pace's boy. Hey, how you doing? Well, how can I help you? And said, I want to apologize to you. And he said, for what? I said, you have bars in your windows. I said, you know, remember when we were kids, we used to mow lawns and collect cans and stuff like that? And he's like, yeah. I said, you know, there wasn't bars in your windows? And he's like, yeah. And I said, I want to apologize for my part in that. He cussed me out. He cursed me out. Mr. J cursed me out. You're the reason why this has happened. And you're the reason why that happened. And because of you, my house is unsafe. My house is not worth what it was because of you and the things you used to do. It brings back emotions for me right now. Excuse me. He sat back and yelled at me. And I sat back and I took it. I didn't act contrary to what how I would act before. I would have choked him out. I would have harmed that man for talking to me the way he did. But this is the part of it. I had to listen to Mr. J and listen to the pain. Excuse me. Listen to the pain that he felt. And say, I'm sorry. I can't do nothing about it. But I came to apologize. Excuse me. Newcomers, when you make amends, when you go through these steps, it's going to happen to you. You're going to make amends with people who are going to not accept your apology. They don't care if you're sober or not, that you don't drink anymore, that you're a service to others. It's the pain that we've caused and the damage that we've caused. But the thing is, when we make those amends, that means we can't repeat them ever again. And through our actions, people will see. People will understand. Because like I said yesterday in the 12 steps, in the 12 and 12, you'll be received back into your community with full citizenship. It will happen. Your life will become full meaning and purpose. And it will definitely happen. You see, because I lacked experience. But you men, and one of my deep, ingrained negative thoughts is not having a father in my life. You men in these rooms became my father figures. I wore a suit because you guys told me how to wear a suit. You guys are my father figures. And the ones who are younger, you are my brother figures. We are from the same tribe. This is what you guys have given me. To be transparent. To let you know that it'll be okay. If we give ourselves this program and be active in our own rescue and continue to talk ourselves into it instead of letting that disease talk us out of it. That property and that money and that prestige will talk us out of it. But when we're spiritually fit, as the big book says, no matter how much income we might have or not have, no matter where we go, when we're spiritually fit, we are okay. I am okay. I'm that hummingbird. You are the hummingbird. You understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense? One day, I took my wife to a place where I had to go make amends. And it's called Home Depot. I'm fresh out. I just got my little beachside studio. I'm on the beach, y'all. I'm on the beach. My first place that I've paid my rent because I worked. And I wanted to go decorate my little beachside studio. It was only 300 square feet, but it was mine. I can watch TV without headphones. I can take a shower without shower shoes on, you know. I had a little hot plate. I had to stand in line with no tray, you know. I can make my own food. So I looked at my little place, and I didn't even have a bed. I had thick quilts. I had thick quilts, but it was mine. It was mine. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to go decorate. I went to Home Depot, and when I say decorate, it doesn't mean pictures and frames. It means hooks to hook my jackets up and stuff like that. You know, my clothes, I'm a dude, I'm living by myself. You know, I'm used to putting stuff on hooks, you know, like my little cell I used to do. So I went to Home Depot, and I didn't trust banks still, so I kept all my money in my pocket. You know, so I go to Home Depot, I go order a few nails and stuff, you know, hooks, and I walk out the store. You got to understand now, I'm 210 pounds, you know, I'm still menacing, look, I still have my penitentiary, you know, my little penitentiary gaze, you know, and I still have a resentment toward anybody in law enforcement. I don't like law enforcement, still had resentment. If you are in a badge, or you have a badge in the gun, or a badge in the flashlight, I do not like you. So I go in Home Depot, order my stuff, and I come back out. I pay for my stuff. See, they didn't have Home Depot when I first went in, so I'm walking out of Home Depot, and the security guard is at the door, and he says, "Excuse me, sir, I need to check your bag. Okay. You know what happens? Lift my chest up a little bit. I start posturing, flexing the arms, start looking at them and saying, man, why you messing with me? All these people up in this store, you want to stop me, partner? No, you ain't going to stop me, partner. He's like, sir, I need to check your bag. I said, man, you ain't going to search my bag until you search everybody in the store, partner. And I pull out the little money I had in my pocket and said, you think I'm going to steal some hooks? I ain't no thief. I'll take it from you. He said, I'm sorry, sir, but we have to, I got to look inside your bag. I said, go ahead. But you mean I ain't going to let you do it? Because I'm like, okay, he's a security guard. Only thing he's armed with is a highlighter. What, are you going to mark me up to death or something? You know? So this is the part of making amends immediately, because I lack the experience of Home Depot and my resentment towards anybody in authority. This older couple walks out and just don't even look at him and just hands the receipt to him, and he just marks it down. Some more people came out, didn't even look at him, and just handed the receipt to him, and he just looked at it and marked it down. I felt this big. And I told him, I said, man, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I'm new to America, you know, and I didn't know this, you know. I'm not from here, and, you know, I didn't know you guys do it like this. And he was like, because of my tattoos and stuff like that, and the way I was looking, he's like, yeah, my brother's not living in America either. And so it's okay. And I said, I'm sorry, man. Is there anything I can do for you? He's like, no, just don't do that no more. I said, okay, thank you. He looked inside the bag, a couple little hooks, and marked my stuff off and left and called my sponsor. I said, man, I made amends immediately. He said, what happened? I told him what happened. He said, that's growth. That's growth. You know. So this is the kind of stuff that is going to happen, newcomers. You know, you're going to be dealt with, you know, being told no. And I'm giving you my experience, you know, because if we don't give ourselves to this program, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, on page 60, the last paragraph is going to say the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will cannot be of success. Because we will continue to collide with something or somebody. So I'm going to say that again. Any life, the first requirement is that any life run on self-will cannot be a success. We cannot be a success when we run our lives from self-will. Our lives have to be run from something else. A power greater than myself has to be the director, because, and when you continue that paragraph, it will say that if the world would be perfect if we do as everyone think we should, how they should do, you know, the show will go on perfect if you do what I tell you to do, you know, because when I'm drinking, you know, I can be very, very kind. I can be generous. I can be self-sacrificing, but you catch me on that wrong day, and with the program, I'm sure you guys too, you know, I can be mean, spiteful, envious, and very violent, you know. So that was one of the first requirements, that my life cannot be run on self-will. It has to be something bigger and better than that. You know what I'm saying? So being rejected is a big deal for an alcoholic like myself. Because if you're an alcoholic like me, you don't like to be told no. Especially with relationships. Now, I'm going to tell you a quick little story about how I apply the program, my hummingbird story, and in the program of recovery. I was at the barbecue one day. I got a friend. And I'm at the barbecue, And I see this beautiful woman come through the back door. I got a few years sobriety now. I see this beautiful woman come through the back door. And my buddy's standing right here, and she comes through the back door. I'm like, wow, who is that? He said, oh, man, that's Sue. I said, Sue? I said, man, she is beautiful. He said, you would like to meet her? I'm like, yeah, but not right now. Not right now, you know? I'm about to do my Jedi mind trick, you know? So I finally get a chance to meet her. This woman told me no 4 times. Stood me up 4 times. Don't you know who I think I am? You can't do me like that. I do you like that. You don't cancel on me. You don't reject me. You know, you don't do me like that. Don't you know who I think I am? I hate you. You know, I hated this woman because she brought out something that I never addressed. But I was that hummingbird. I ain't gonna lie. I fell in love with that woman the first time I saw her. And then one day, we were communicating on Facebook, you know, and then she said, can I call? And I called, and she was like, she's like, can I speak with DJ? I'm like, yeah, this is he. Hey, this is Sue. I'm like, hey, babe. I didn't call her babe at the time. I said, hey, how you doing? She's like, fine. I'm like, she said, can I see you again? I'm like, you know what? I'm done with you. You know, I'm done with you. I'm finished with you. You know, you can do me like that. She's like, well, I want to invite you to coffee. I said, when? Where? What time? I end up marrying that woman. I married that woman, you know. So this is persistence, because why? I knew what I was about. I knew that my program was intact. And we talked about the program. My wife is in sobriety also. She has a little bit more time than me. But I believe today I woke up earlier than she did today. And I think that I have more sobriety today than her, you know. You know, so this is the kind of stuff that we get to do. From there, you know, we go to the steps. My meditation, I was telling a friend of mine today, he said, what do you do to meditate? And I said, Sam, I do some abnormal stuff for meditation. He said, what? I said, I'm a crocheter. I'm a master crocheter. I will make a hat. I'll make a scarf. I'll make a bikini. I'll make baby booties. I'll make anything. And I teach at-risk kids how to crochet during my spare time. Something that they'll never forget. It teaches them to focus on what's in front of them and what's around them. We pick up odd little things when we get sober newcomers, you know. And from there, I get a chance to do abnormal things, you know. I've been going into jails, not as an inmate, but I've been going inside the jails since 2009. I'm a member of H&I, hospitals and institutions, and I get to go back inside the prisons, and I get the chance to carry the message to where I received it. And I say, I'm coming as you are, dog, but don't leave the same way you came in, you know, because I am one of you who let somebody else do my thinking for me. Because the men in these rooms and the women in these rooms, I started hanging around with the winners, and that's what they say in the program, hang with the winners, because when you hang with a winner, you eventually become a winner yourself. Because why? I'm around these men who are sober and who does the recovery work, and so this group of men are of the same mindset, of the same, you know, likeness, mindset, and therefore, these men in the rooms, they begin to produce similar and positive results. Same thing with the women. You hang with women who do the work, you become of the same mind likeness and the mindset, and you begin to produce similar results. So now, guys who come around, we all produce similar results. We don't drink, we talk about the solution rather than the problem. We look at the face of the problem, we look at the face of the solution, and we do the action. So therefore, your thinking is better than mine. I want what you have. Will you show me? Because you're a winner. And I want to produce the same results you produce. And therefore, you see a grimy dude like me producing positive results, then you start to produce them when you come around us, because you begin to have the same mindset as us. And when you hang around these women who produce positive results, you begin to produce positive results. And what we do is we give this stuff away freely, like the big book says. It's like a gold mine, but you got to give it away in order to keep it, you know. And that's what I began to do. I used to work for a company that we had a satellite dish, and sometimes they would call me. I was a service tech, so they used to call us to fix the signal. We had to find the satellite, and we got to adjust the azimuth, you know, and then lock it in. So that's me. I can't transmit something that I don't have, because I don't have the tools to fix it. So what happened was, you guys became the company, you know, because you guys are tuned in to something greater than ourselves, and you lock that stuff in because these 12 steps gives us the tools to stay locked in. You dig what I'm saying? And so I began to go to these people's homes and climb on top of the roofs and have my equipment and my tools, and I would look at the satellite dish, and I would turn it in, and I would lock it in. And then all of a sudden I'll hook the barrels back up, go back inside the house, turn the television on, and it's working. Perfect signal. Maybe 98. Well, that's this program of recovery. In order for me to stay tuned in, I gotta come to these rooms. This experience with hope is the tools. These 12 steps are the tools in order for me to maintain my recovery, to be active in my own recovery. So I have to stay tuned in. And this is a big deal. Because if I don't, I'm gonna stay tuned out. And my disease is gonna say, man, you don't need them. Man, like I said, if it wasn't for you guys, I would not be here now. So now I get a chance to transmit something that I have. You know? And then you transmit something back to me. And then we get these newcomers and we say, dog, we can have fun. Excuse me, I use the word dog because it's not, you know, that's how we kind of talk in Los Angeles a little bit, you know. So, you know, it's not derogatory, you know, like, what's up, dog? Like, what's up, dog? Oof, you know, stuff like that, you know. But I don't call the women dogs, you know. I don't call women dogs. So, you know, women, I will never call you that. But like, if you see me out and about, I'm like, what's up, dog? It's not derogatory. Don't hit me, please. Okay, but this is the stuff that we do right here. You know, I attend a lot of men's groups, and especially early in recovery is very, very important, because it'll take you off your focus. It'll take you off your focus. You know, and I have to get spiritually right. You know, but that's part of my prayer and meditation. And I get a chance to do this. I get a chance to transmit something that I do have. And my life becomes totally abnormal. And I remember the first time I went inside the jails I just left. And I get a chance to go inside there. And I look around and I look around the rooms. And I'm like, wow, nothing's changed. And then I see them. I see a small group of men reading that big book. I know what they're reading now. And they're saying, this is the solution. It's inside here. They sidestep all that madness, because that was me right there. Everybody's doing their thing over here, but you have three or four guys in the corner reading the big book, trying to find a solution and saying, my life has to be totally different. You know, it has to be totally different. So this is an amazing, amazing program, and I'm grateful to be here. And there's a lot to say. I will save some of it, you know, for later on. But Melbourne, I'm grateful. I want to thank all the committee chairmen, the organizers. I want to thank all you guys for coming in on a Saturday, because you don't have to be here. You can be out doing anything you want, you know. I'm grateful for all you guys, you know, you men in these rooms, I love you. You women in these rooms, I love you all. And you know what? There's nothing you can do about it. Absolutely nothing. Okay? So, you know, let's remain active in our own recovery. We still can enjoy life. You know, we're not a glum lot. because tonight at 11 o'clock, I'm a party like a rock star right here, you know. And I want to say again, thank you for being in attendance. This is a big deal. Be active in your own rescue. Come as you are, but don't leave as you came. Somebody is waiting to hear your story, and we save lives through recovery. My name is DJ, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is DJ, and I'm an alcoholic. I am having a wonderful time out here today. It is hot, and I'm really enjoying it. And in Los Angeles, we have a meeting in Venice Beach. It's actually on the beach. And I'm like, we should go outside, you know, and have a meeting. But I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be here. This means a lot to me. I am really humble, and I am extremely grateful to be here. And you just don't know when we went to our room last night. My wife and I, we sit back and looking over the city, and we look at each other and say, this is amazing that we're in Melbourne, Australia, with a bunch of alcoholics. This does not happen. This does not happen to people not like, who are not in our tribe. We don't have people come from across the globe who share the same experiences, similar stories, and we all look for the same solution. We're the only ones who do this. We're the only ones who lived in the maze, who were trapped in the maze. And now we're the only ones who are able to live an amazing life. We are the ones that who can talk about we've been there. And this is what happened. And this is what we're like now. And what does it cost? My willingness to show up. What does it cost to keep this program running? A dollar. We pass a bucket around. We support ourselves, our own contribution. This is what it costs, the willingness to be open, willing to be open to do this work. To see a newcomer who is stressed out at the far side of the room, feeling uncomfortable, who does not have social skills, who does not know how to speak and say, hello, my name is DJ and I'm an alcoholic. And what do? An unfamiliar face. What we do is we reach out and say, hello, my name is whatever it is and I'm an alcoholic, and we say, welcome. We will love you until you're able to love yourself like you guys have done me. Didn't know you guys. And I know that because if you're in this room today, life was in the maze. You know, our lives were in the maze. We didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous because everything was okay. I didn't. I did not come to these rooms to tell you that how my life was so unmanageable and that every time I put that first one in me, everything goes out the window. People who are in the program don't do this kind of stuff. Normal people just don't go to a meeting on a beautiful Saturday afternoon to sit in a room and listen to somebody tell their story of what happened to them and what they're like and what they're like now. I love you guys, man. And I really mean that. And I love this program. It might sound crazy, but I'm a grateful alcoholic. I am so grateful that I get to share my experience with you. And today I've walked around and I try to introduce myself to everyone. I want to have a conversation with everyone. And that's what I've been doing today. I walked around with a newcomer today and said, it's okay, dog. It's okay, dog. It's all right. You're amongst folks. You're amongst your tribe. It might feel abnormal. You might feel uneasy with yourself, but just say, hello, my name is so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic, and you will feel comfortable. These people will open themselves up to you. This is where I learned social skills. Now, given the stuff that I do now, do you think I'm gonna walk around my neighborhood and tell my homies, hey homie, I'm feeling vulnerable right now. You know? I'm feeling real sensitive right now, homie. You know? Do you think I'm gonna walk around that prison yard, go sit on the bleachers with the homies, and say, man, I'm feeling empty right now, man. No, I can't do that. But when I walk around these rooms of recovery and I see you men and you women, and I say, man, I'm gonna have kids. What do I do? Because I'm scared. I don't want my children to ever see me drunk. What do I do about this? You know? And when I see you women in these rooms and saying, I'm having problems right now. I want to do this for my woman, for my wife. What do I do? And you guys give me your experience, strength, and hope. See, that's what we do here. That's what we do here. And I am so grateful, you know. It's like one day, my men's stag meeting that I go to is about 100 men on Saturday morning. It's called Bread and Roses. You know, and before I was getting married and before my life took for a change, I used to sit back and watch and listen to the experience, strength, and hope that these men used to give about family, you know, about recovery, you know, about employment, you know. And you guys took your time with me. Taught me everything that I'm doing now. And in turn, I get a chance to give this away to other people. I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I can live beyond my wildest dreams. But it's not my life. It's given me a life, but it is not my life. I am grateful for the life Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, but I get a chance to live life on life's terms. This is first and foremost God, program, family, home, employment. Those are my priorities to live life. And I would not have this if it wasn't for you guys. You know, remain active in our own recovery is a very important phrase. And when I say remain active and be active in your own recovery, that means of service. These people who set this Vicky Paw up, people who stack chairs, who work with other people, who go out of their comfort zone to go carry this message, are active in their own recovery. Because if I don't, I'm going back to what it used to be like. And like I said before, I tell the newcomers, the only thing that's different between you and me is I have a few more days of sobriety, but we're all one drink away. Everyone in this room, I'm gonna speak for myself, I am one drink away. If I stop doing what AA has given me and the suggestions that you guys given me, you know, it's very, 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 very important. I'm gonna tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. You know, I'm my mother's first son, her only son, and I have two sisters. So I lived in a home with where estrogen ran rampant, you know. But it was okay. Because I was a young boy wanting to be a man and looking for love in all the wrong places, what happened for me was I needed to belong to something because I felt like I was missing something. You know, I missed a whole lot. You know, looking for acceptance. I had the opportunity to do some certain things, and it has touched a lot of people, which I'm very, very grateful for. And when people, I had written a 500-page book, and the people that write me and ask me about the book, I say, man. That wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for you guys in these rooms giving me the opportunity to do the things that I do. And there's a story in there about myself that I never accepted myself, because where I lived, now this is for acceptance, you guys. Where I lived and where I grew up, I was ridiculed. I was teased. I was made fun of. I wasn't a part of, because I was, my skin tone was too light. So I was always the one that was talked about, picked on, and it messed with my self-esteem, because I wasn't dark enough. I wasn't considered a part of, and it affected me in a way that was one of the causes of why I chose the life I chose. But one particular day, I was riding my bicycle, and I had a Casper the Ghost t-shirt on, you know, and one of my older homeboys, he told me, come here. I'm like, what's up, man? He's like, that's going to be your new name. And I said, what? He said, Ghost. And I looked down, and it empowered me. It empowered me so much that my name wasn't DJ anymore. My name was Ghost. It affected me so much that I got it tattooed on my body. And for most of my life, people know me only as Ghost. He empowered me at that time. He empowered me to embrace myself at that time. But I was still missing something. Still missing something. I was still missing that love that I never got at home. Then I started a new way of life. I started gangbanging. I started selling drugs. And I started to drink. And that drink did something for me. I was funny. I can laugh. I can be a part of. I can be the go-to guy. You know, it made me feel a part of. That was my solution. Like a newcomer, before I started drinking, I'd be in the far end of the room at a party and don't know how to say hello. But I put that first one in me. I'm the guy dancing on top of the tables, you know. But what happened for me was, it started to take me downward, on a downward spiral. My life began to become unmanageable, which I did not even see. You know, my family became my victims. My ego was extreme because of the things that I had. My alcoholism progressed. My life was totally unmanageable. I was given, make a long story short, I was given a 20-year prison sentence. I was 19 years old at the time. And they gave me 60 seconds to plead guilty to a 20-year prison sentence. If I did not take that 20-year prison sentence, they were going to give me 27 years, which they were going to find me guilty, because of my three big homies who brought me into that way of life were going to testify against me. I could not win. So I pled guilty to 20 years. And my alcoholism progressed. I could not live in the now. And the funny thing about it is, that same judge that gave me a 20-year prison sentence, last week, I typed that judge a letter. And I said, thank you. I could not see it at the time, but thank you. This is what happened to me. You were doing your job, I understand that. But this is what happened to me right now. My life has been like this. These are the things that's happened to me since I've been out. And I wanted to tell you guys yesterday, when I first saw you H&I people that were coming inside the prison, you know, the God concept has got to be something greater than myself. Because if I would have came outside a minute later, if I would have came outside 30 seconds later, I would have missed you guys walking by. I would have missed it. I wouldn't be here now if God did not put me in that position. If I did not plead guilty to 20 years, it sounds insane, but I did a right, correct amount of time. I had to spend half my life in prison in order for me to have a life. You guys giving me a life. You guys giving me a life. Because like I said before, what the program says before, I had to concede that my life was unmanageable and that I continue to collide because my life is self-will and I continue to collide with somebody and everything. And it's so important. It's so important for me to say this. It's so important for me to tell the newcomers that, man, it would definitely be okay. But again, I wrote the judge a nice letter and said, man, thank you, Your Honor, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, my life has been like this. And because of what you had to do by law, I couldn't accept it at the time, you know, and I'm waiting to hear back from them. Hopefully when I go back home, I'll have a letter in my mailbox from the judge. But when they first gave me the 20-year sentence, you know, the funny thing about it was I was drunk. I knew I was going to plead guilty to 20 years. I could not stand it. And I'm not going to take this. I'm not going to accept it, you know, sober. So I got drunk. And so when they said, Mr. DJ, we're going to give you a 20-year sentence. And I said, anything you got to say? And I said, I can't do 20 years. And the judge said, you can one day at a time. Yeah. It wasn't funny then. but I can laugh about it now. You know. And he said, anything you got to say? I said, I can't do 20 years. He said, you can do it one day at a time. U.S. Marshals immediately cuffed me up, you know. So it's so amazing that God was always there for me. My higher power was always there for me, you know. So after I do my prison sentence, what happens is that I got blessed with certain opportunities. And I had, like I said, my parole officer, he had me, see, my parole officer didn't know I had you guys. He didn't know that I had you men and you women in his rooms cheering me on. They didn't know that you guys were right there grooming me to do something great. Even, you know, when I say great, it means carrying his message, is going to meetings, is not going to jail anymore. See, my parole officer did not know this. You know, like I said, he had me taking parenting classes, and I don't even have any kids. But I did it though, you know. You know, okay. If you need me to do that, I would do that. But he didn't know that I had you taking me through these steps. He did not know that you were taking me to meetings. He did not know that you were spending time with me, learning how to be social. They didn't know that you were teaching me how to enjoy myself. They did not know that you guys taught me how to take myself out on dates. My parole officer didn't know that you taught me how to be of service. My parole officer did not know that you were taking me, you were listening to my fourth and fifth step. He did not know this. So one particular day, you know, I had the opportunity to do certain things. And it's so funny because when I look back at it now, it is funny. Now imagine this. Imagine this. My parole officer is at home with his family, watching television, watching the Hollywood Christmas parade. And the next person who comes on the float is me, waving to everybody. And he's sitting there with his family, saying, oh my God, he's on my caseload. And then they interview me, and I say, yeah, my name is DJ, and, you know, I want to say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and thank you guys for having me. I appreciate that. And then the thing went on, and the next day, he calls me and says, you got to come into the office. So I'm like, okay. I'm thinking I got to take a drug test. Because why? I have been working. I have been taking drug tests, and I have not been fired from a job, and I haven't given him a dirty test. But so I'm thinking he has to, give me a drug test. So I go inside the office, and he said, what did you do this weekend, Mr. V? And I said, I helped some people, and I hung up with some friends over the weekend. He said, was that you on Channel 9? And I said, yeah, it was. And he said, what happened? And I said, that's how it works. This is how God works. He said, you were in the Christmas parade. I'm like, yes, I was. He said, you know what? You're a waste of my time. And I said, what does that mean? He said, you've been on parole for 18 months. You haven't given me any problems. The man that I see in this file is not the man I see in front of me. Because why? He did not know that I had you guys. You understand what I'm saying? You feel me? He did not know. So he said, you're wasting my time. He said, why are you in the suit, Mr. DJ? And I said, because the mayor's giving me an award. And he's like, Mayor Viragosa? I'm like, yeah, he's giving me an award. He said, for what? And I said, for my volunteer work. How amazing is that? Alcoholic, convict, is being celebrated by the mayor. And he said, what kind of volunteer work you do? And I said, I work with at-risk youth. I volunteer my time with at-risk youth. Because you taught me how to volunteer my time and expect nothing back. He said, what are you teaching to do? And I said, you're going to laugh at this. He said, what? I am a master crocheter. I crochet blankets, baby booties, beanies, scarves, bikinis, you know, the whole thing. Teddy bears, rabbits. And he said, you really doing this? I'm like, yeah. He said, so basically what I want you to do is I want you to get you a lawyer. I said, okay. So I walked across the parking lot and got my little thing and went home, called my sponsor and cried on the phone. And I said, thank you. I called Liz. I said, thank you. And said, for what? They said, because what you done for me. He said, we didn't do nothing. We just made simple suggestions. It was up to you to make the decision to do it or, to do with them or not. And you haven't been drinking in between. So congratulations, you know. So now here we go on Christmas Eve of 2008. Guess what? I've been on parole, probation, supervised release ever since I was 13 years old. Somebody's always been telling me what to do. So on Christmas Eve 2008, I get a phone call and say, is this DJ? I'm like, yes it is. They said, what is the best gift that an ex-felon can get? And I said, I don't know. He said, how about a pardon? I said, what do you mean? They said, you had 4 years remaining. You're supposed to get off parole October 31st, 2012. I said, yeah, this is Christmas Eve 2008. He said, that same judge gave the 20-year sentence. Granted your only motion, granted your motion, and said, continue to do God's work. I broke down like an old Chevy, you know. Just cried, called my sponsor and said, man, guess what? He said, what happened? I said, I'm not on parole no more. They cleared everything. I can pass a live scan. My fingerprints are taken out. How amazing is that from a convict alcoholic? Because of what you gave me. Because suggestions that you gave me. Because you told me to be active in your own rescue. Because you told me come as you are, but don't leave the same way you came in. Because you told me you have to develop a strong desire to serve other people. Don't expect nothing either. When you do something nice for somebody, don't expect a thank you. Just do because it's the right thing to do. So here we go now, you guys. I got a few years sobriety. I got 3 years sobriety. I've been supervised my whole entire life. I got a green light. I can do what I want to do now. I ain't got to pee in no bottle no more. I ain't got to show up in the parole office no more. I ain't got no parole officers coming to my home no more. I ain't got to go to the meetings no more. I ain't got to keep my commitments no more. I ain't got to do nothing. I'm free and clear now. I'm a new man. Newcomers, that's my disease telling me. My disease saying, let me get you to myself. Come on, dog, let me get you to myself again. We can do a whole bunch of things. We can do some good things. That's what my disease is telling me. So I called my sponsor immediately because that's the tools that we are given. That's the tools that I was given. When that broke brain starts to think again, call your sponsor. Newcomers, call your sponsor. I called my sponsor and said, Russ, man, I'm a free man. I ain't got nothing. I said, this is the first time in almost 30 years, 27 years that I ain't been supervised. What do I do now? He said, what you've been doing for the last 3 years? But you understand, man, I'm on parole no more. He said, don't let that take away what the program has given you. He said, let the rooms of recovery supervise you. Let your commitments supervise you. Let the men that you work with supervise you. Let Alcoholics Anonymous supervise you. So I'm still under supervision, you know. I'm still being supervised by you, and I am totally grateful for this right here, for this opportunity. You know, it's attraction rather than promotion. It's the things that we do, you know, the places that we have to go. And sometimes we have to selfishly give ourselves, we have to get in that traffic. I have to get in that traffic and to come to places where sometimes I don't want to go. Do you think I want to go to Skid Row, downtown Los Angeles at 7:30 at nighttime? No, but I got to go. Because there's somebody in that treatment center, there's somebody in that jail that's waiting to hear something that we have to say, you know? So it's my responsibility to carry this message, you know? And it's everyone in this room's responsibility to carry this message, you know? And to be active. It's a big, big deal. And when we come to the 12th step, man, it's having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. You know, I'm the same person you're going to see right now. I'm the same person you'll see walking in Federation Square. I'm the same person you'll see walking in Santa Monica. It don't change. I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect. My wife would tell you that, huh? No, I'm just joking. But we have a good home. We have a very good home. We have sobriety in our home, you know. And she does her thing. I get a chance to do my thing, you know. And we enjoy life, you know. And when the program and what the big book says, it says when we're spiritually fit, we can go anywhere. We can do anything. If we have anybody in this room who is entertainer and who does music, you know that most of it is sponsored by alcoholic beverages. You know, so I'm a musician, I do music. So I'm in Hollywood and I get a chance to perform and, you know, with these big groups. And the green room is sponsored by Patron. They're giving away Patron gift baskets. And the first thing I say is like, oh man, I don't drink. So I call my sponsor and say, man, I'm getting ready to do my 45 minutes and I'm kind of nervous. It's sponsored by Patron. He said, what are you there to do? I said, I'm here to perform. He said, for how long? I said, for 45 minutes. He said, okay, just do that. That simple. Because my broke brain is, do I got a drink? No, under any circumstances, I don't have to, you know. So I got a chance to do things like that, you know. When I got out of prison, I had a chance to as practicing these principles. I apologized to my sisters also. I made amends to my sisters, you know, for them not having a brother for most of their lives, you know. So now they're both married with children. Both married with children, and I watched these children grow up in the visiting room. That's unnatural. But I'm the victim. I didn't know that my alcoholism and my bad decision making affected these unborn children who weren't even born yet. Because when I drink, I have the inability to make a rational decision. You know? I have the inability to make a rational decision. And from infants, changing pampers in the visiting room, and I have a niece, she's 15 years old now, and she knows everything, you know. And she's my little sweetheart. And she said, Uncle, I'm glad you're home, but please don't ever go back there. And I said, I believe me, baby, I won't.
You know, and what I'm grateful for is that my sisters and my brother-in-laws give me the opportunity to care for these children, to feed these children outside the visiting room. You know, it's totally amazing, you know, of how life can totally be once I gave myself to this program. You know, and then working with other people, it's getting hot in here. So this is the important part. It's changing not some things, it's changing everything. It's changing our friends. You know, it's relying on each other. This is what the experience written hope is. Because if I talked like this in front of the other things that I do, they would probably have me locked up. You know, like something's wrong with you. But if you laugh at some of the things I say, that means you identify. You know, and we have the similarities right there. So this is a big, big deal, you know. And, you know, my life has been just like totally insane. Totally insane. I get a chance to go around to different places and talk about what we're talking about today. And I go any and everywhere. One particular time, I was in San Francisco, and I had to go speak at a meeting. I need to go to a meeting, and I called central office, and they said, "Yeah, there's one on Polk and Ellis." I know nothing about San Francisco, so I'm in Polk and Ellis. So I said, "Okay," so I'm walking through Polk and Ellis. Now it's grimy, you know, it's like really, really, you know, grimy, you know, but I thrive in that kind of environment. So I'm walking around, I'm seeing the drug addicts, you know, the prostitutes, you know, the drug dealers, the police, and everywhere. So I'm sitting there saying, okay, I know what's happening, I know what to look out for. So I see the symbol on the door, and I'm like, okay, this is it. So I'm like 20 minutes early, and I'm in Polk and Ellis. They call it the Tenderloin, you know, and I don't know what the abbreviations mean in front of the doors, right? So I go there, and I see this woman coming down the street, you know. So I'm like, hey, let me, you know, tighten up, tuck my shirt in and stuff like that. And she come walking down, and I'm looking now. I haven't been exposed to this kind of stuff yet. You know, I haven't been exposed to people with different sexual preferences than myself, right? And so I see the woman coming down the street, and it's actually a man, you know. And so I'm like, first thing I do is I get prejudicial. I have no experience in this right here. Actually, no experience. And she says, "Hello, are you an alcoholic?" And I said, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, yeah. Excuse me for a second. Call my sponsor. I said, "I can't go to this meeting." He's like, "Why?" I said, "Because people with different sexual preferences than myself." He said, "They're alcoholics." I'm like, "Yeah." He said, "But they're different sexual preferences than myself." He said, "Are they alcoholics?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "But they're different sexual preferences." He said, what does the big book say?" He said, "We're people who wouldn't normally mix." I said, "Okay, you wouldn't normally mix with them, but you're alcoholic, so you better go to that meeting." And then everyone starts coming, and they said, "We have any out of towners?" I raised my hand, and they said, "Yeah, we have DJ from Los Angeles. He's going to be our speaker today." And I'm in the room, and I'm like looking around. I get a text message from my sponsor. He says, "Close your eyes and listen. Close your eyes and listen for it." I listened. We're the same. We might not look the same, but we suffer from the same disease of alcoholism. We went through the steps. We talked about the steps. We talked about the fourth step. He talked about the same thing that I talk about. They talk about when they put that first one in them, it's a done deal. They talk about how they have no limits. They talk about how they lost their families. They talk about how they went to prison. They talk about this and that. They talk about everything. They talk about not being a part of, about being looked at different. And not accepting this. See, like I said in the beginning, I did not know what the symbol. I did not know what the words meant in front of the meeting. You know, I thought that the G meant like general admittance or something, you know what I'm saying? I didn't know it meant gay, you know? So I was like, I thought it was, you know, I didn't know what it meant, so I went anyway, you know? But then when I saw it, you know, all this stuff happened. And after the end of that meeting, I heard what I heard. I opened my eyes and I looked around the rooms and I saw men and I saw alcoholics. Yeah, you know, our sexual preferences are different. And this is what I want to talk about. This is what I want to give you guys. Yeah, we're all different. But if you're in this room, we're all the same. We come from a different road, from a different spoke, but this is our hub right here. This is the nucleus. This is our catalyst. This is my catalyst. These are my experiences that I have. I did not have any experiences, but I have now, you know? And after that meeting was over, it was at nighttime. And they said, DJ, we'll walk you back down to your hotel room. I said, okay. So I'm walking down the street with four, the word they use is trannies, men who dress like women, men who have boobs and all that stuff, right? I'm walking down to the Westin Hotel at Union Square in San Francisco, and people are looking at this guy in a suit walking with these women, you know, and being judged. Did I care? Hell no. These are my people. They were going to look after me while I was in San Francisco, like you guys are looking after me and my wife while we're in Australia. We walk into the lobby, you know, this prestigious hotel, and everybody looks at us. And I gave everyone a hug. Thank you. I will see you tomorrow. Thank you. I will see you tomorrow. Thank you. That's the beauty of this program. No matter where we are. See, now, working these steps, going through these steps is a very, very important part, because if I did not, I wouldn't have been around them, because we're different. If we do not work these steps, you think we're going to be in this room on a beautiful Saturday afternoon? If we didn't have a commonality, I don't think I would be here. I don't think you guys would be here. But this is a beautiful program. We find all kinds of stuff. We find love in these rooms. We find friendship in these rooms. We find camaraderie in these rooms. This is a big deal. And there's nothing better than giving this stuff away and to see someone recreate their life because of what was given to you. You know, to see women grow and teach other women. It's beautiful. You know, to see men raise their children in these rooms. You can't beat that. You know, and to have new friendships. You can't beat that. But what we gotta do is I gotta work these steps. I have to work these steps. It's very, very important. So, to everyone in these rooms, when we go through these steps and we read the book, please remember that there is a solution to newcomers. There is a solution. Okay? We have to, like the big book says, almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confessions of our shortcomings, which this process requires for its successful consummation. But we see that it really works in others. And then we are approached by those in whom the problem had been solved. And then there was nothing left for us to do but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools that we're going to lay at your feet, newcomers. But you have to take these suggestions, you know, and you have to concede that your life, that my life, run on self-will, can never be a success. And once we get clean and sober and we get a chance to do the work and we recreate our lives, when I recreate my life, that's just stuff. It is not DJ. It's stuff. Is my happiness is not conducive to stuff. It's right here. The longest journey that I had to make was from right here to right here. The longest 18 inches I ever had to make. You know. And I am so grateful to be here in Australia with you guys. We're gonna go try watching Penguins later on tonight. You know? But I'm really extremely grateful to be here. And I have one more thing, but I'm gonna say it, I guess, later on tonight or tomorrow. And we're gonna have a really, really great time. But it works if we work it. You know, it does not if we do not. Newcomers, an unfamiliar face, stick your hand out, you know, to a complete stranger. Welcome them like you guys made me feel welcome. And I love each and every one of you. And like I said before, there's nothing you can do about it. Okay? So my name is DJ and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is DJ, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to begin by I want to thank God for the opportunity to come here. And this is a big, big deal for me to come here and to be able to be around my fellow alcoholics. It really means a lot to me, and it touches my spirit, and it touches my heart to be able to come here and to share my experience and hope with you guys. And this is totally, I got to say, this is abnormal. This is abnormal for an alcoholic like me to travel. I don't know how many miles, but it was a lot to get down here and to come and be a part of the convention that you guys put on. So thank you, convention committee, and everyone who has a part in this right here. And thank you guys for coming in, for your attendance and being a part of the solution instead of part of the problem. Because one of my things was, growing up, I always counted my problems instead of counting my blessings. So now, since I got sober, I got a chance to be able to count my blessings. And there are many, many, many blessings that I got a chance to count, you know. And my deeply ingrained negative thoughts and my feelings and behaviors, they're not as bone deep as they used to be, you know. As the program says, we get to live life on life's terms. But those deeply ingrained negative thoughts, feelings, and behaviors do not control me as they once did many, many years ago. And I have almost 8 years of sobriety. My sobriety date is July 3rd, 2005. I got sober in prison my last 10 months. It's because of the H&I committee, which is the hospitals and institutions. You guys came in, you guys carried the message to me and many other men who were suffering, and also you women. You know, you guys came in and we had a chance to see what a sober woman looks like. Very, very powerful. A sober woman and sober men who come in throughout their days, when they get off work from working an 8-hour shift, and they say, I have to go to this prison to go carry this message to these alcoholics who suffer. Very, very profound. I thank you. I thank all of you who came into them prisons. I thank all of you who've came into those treatment centers to carry this message of change, to uncover, discover, and discard. You guys gave me the tools in order for me to build a beautiful life. My life is beautiful. There's difficulties. I struggle, but I continue to progress. And it's all been outlined in the 12 steps of recovery. These are the tools that I was given to build my life the way it is now. And it'll only get better as long as I do not put that first one in me. As long as I don't drink. As long as I continue to do what I've been doing for the last couple of years. I don't believe I'm going to take a drink, but I'm not immune from it. And from a newcomer, I want to say welcome. We've been waiting for you guys. And what we have in common, newcomers, is the fact that we are both one drink away. But the only difference is I got a few more days of sobriety. See, back in the days when they first formed the program, you know, there were two men who sat in the room and two alcoholics who shared their experience and hope with each other. And therefore, a third man added, and a fourth man, and then a fifth man, and then it started growing, you know. It started growing. And these men got together, and they got a chance to share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. This is how Alcoholics Anonymous was formed. Alcoholics Anonymous did not care where you were from. Alcoholics Anonymous did not care how much money you made. You know, the color of your skin. You know, it didn't care about anything. It cared about recovery. And it wanted you to, and wanted us to, it gave us a venue and a vehicle and the tools in order to live a beautiful life. You know. And back in the day when they first formed this program, Bill and Bob, one had one more day than the other. They worked with each other. They worked with other alcoholics. They worked with men on Skid Row. They went places. See, this is where the service part comes in, from my understanding, what I was taught by my sponsor, Russell S., and then his sponsor, his name is Gene Duffy, and Frank Honeycutt. You know, they're no longer with us today. But this is the stories, and Bob Seger, this is the lineage that my sponsor came from and where I come from. So I ask a lot of questions about, you know, we talk about days of recovery. And the thing is, I joked around earlier and said I woke up a little earlier than my wife, so I have more time of sobriety than her. You know, it's a little joke, but you know, it's true though. But on the serious side about that is the fact that long-term sobriety back in the day was 6 months. Long-term sobriety back in the day was 1 year. If you had 1 year of sobriety, you were considered a no-timer. You know? And you got a chance, like, how did you do this? How did you do this? How did you remain sober after 30 years of drinking for 1 year? And this is what happened from what I was told. These men, businessmen, who knew that they were alcoholics, who knew that every time they drank, who've been through the ringer, like that story in the book where he says he added just a little shot to his milk, just spicing it up, and then a little bit more. That's just like us today when we say that cannabis is green, it's a seed, it's from God, it's okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. But then all of a sudden, we find ourselves back into that same position. Just like on page 7 in the big book, when the founder of the program talked about he used to use pills. He used to pop pills, you know. So it led him back to the same thing over again. And it's the same thing with us. The part about the long-term sobriety is the fact that what keeps me sober today? What keeps me sober? What keeps me sober is I got to go out and do this service work. I have to go out of my comfort zone. I might live in a beautiful area, as Bill and them did. They lived in beautiful areas. They were businessmen. But what they done was, they did what people who would normally do. They went down to Skid Row and they talked to alcoholics. They gave their story to alcoholics. They brought them back. They gave them the tools. And they went out and they served some other people. The next you know, the program 5 years, 10 years. The program started growing. And all these people from different walks of life started coming together in these rooms. That's why it's a program of anonymity. And they started to grow. And they started to flourish. And they started to see these men and women's lives turn for the better. See, that's what I wanted. And I believe that's what everyone in this room wants. Want to live free and happy and joyous and free. It sounds really square, you know, if you really think about it. What do you want? I want a joyous and happy free life. You know, it sounds square, you know. But it's actually some really, really cool stuff. And from my point of view, I am a drunk. I like to drink. I like the effects that alcohol gives me. But the results that alcohol gives me, I do not like. It puts me in places where I used to pray, like, oh man, get me out of this and I won't drink no more. You see, what makes me an alcoholic is not because I drink and wake up and play in different places. And I don't, you know, I'm not an alcoholic because I drink and I go to jails and prisons. You know, what makes me an alcoholic is that I swear it off. I swear before God that I will never take another drink again. That's what makes me an alcoholic. The effects, what happens to me. Not because I drink a whole bunch and I got a DUI. Not because I drink a lot and I crash my car. Not because I drink a lot and lose my job or whatever might happen. That doesn't make me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is I make a conscious decision to say and to declare, I will never drink again. And then my wife leaves me. I lose my job. I drink again. I go further down the rabbit hole. When life gets good, I want to celebrate. I take a drink. That's what makes me an alcoholic. When I declare and I say I will never drink again, and then all of a sudden I drink again, and the progression increases 100-fold, and the punishment for me taking that first drink is unthinkable of what happens to me. But there is a solution. There is a solution to all this misery. There's a solution to all this despair. There's a solution to my deeply ingrained negative thoughts. There's a solution to all of it. That means I don't ever have to drink again when everything is beautiful. I don't have to drink again. When I go to a place where alcohol is served, I do not have to drink again. But there is prescribed tools, which is in the 12 steps, that prepares me not to take that drink. I'm around people who do what I do because I am of like-mindedness. I want what you guys have. You guys are transmitting something that is unseen but only felt. You cannot see it, but you can only feel it. And when I'm around you guys, I feel so comfortable. I can be DJ. I can be the guy that's just walking down the street and looking at hummingbirds do their thing. I can be the guy down at St. Kilda watching penguins, you know. I can be that guy who is in Federation Square admiring the crocheted trees. I can be that guy when I'm by myself, when there's no one around, and be okay with me, what God has given me, and be totally grateful. Like I said, I was telling a newcomer that, man, this stuff is abnormal. What do you mean by abnormal? Man, look at this. I'm in Australia. Abnormal. What's abnormal is I got a job. You know, what's abnormal, I pay my bills on time. What's abnormal that I extend my hand to a complete stranger and say, hello, my name is DJ and I'm an alcoholic. That's abnormal. What was abnormal is that they give me keys to a building that I don't turn it into something else. What's abnormal is that you trust me with money to turn in for a whole month. You asked me to collect money for literature for those who can't go to meetings, you know, and I take that money and I go and I turn it in and I get a receipt because I'm accountable to you guys. What's abnormal for me is the opportunity to go back into the prisons to carry the message, which is where I received it. That's abnormal. You know, what's abnormal is I get to have different experiences with one woman. That's abnormal. What's abnormal is I get a chance to go to my men's stag meetings and tell you guys, I am scared to death. We're going to have babies and I do not know what to do. What do I do? And you give me your experience. You guys support me. This is abnormal. But as long as I continue to do this and work these steps, it becomes normal. It becomes a regular part of my life. You know, like I said before, you know, I am from the Long Beach area. I grew up in poverty. My mother was only 17 when she had me. So I am familiar with fear, because everything that woman felt, I felt. And when I was born, I could not talk. Could not talk. Something happened when I was in that womb. But it wasn't activated until I took my first drink. Some people say it's genetic. Some people say it's circumstances, society, social models. Yeah, it might be that. But when you suffer from great, deeply ingrained negative feelings and thoughts, and when you become old enough and you take that first one, I'm tall enough. Everything is okay. You know? I'm thin enough, or I'm heavy enough, or whatever it might be. I am what you expect me to be. I am what you expect me to be. But not what I expect me to be, or what my higher power expects me to be. This is what happens when I take that drink. Because it's taken so many years for me to get to where I am now. This is abnormal for me to live this kind of life that I live now, because I followed these simple suggestions of these 12 steps. Making amends. Telling one man my entire life. You know? It's a blessing. You know? And like I was saying before, is that looking for love in all the wrong places. When I first came back to America, what I told my sponsor, when I went to a meeting, I saw these beautiful women sitting in front of the meeting house smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee. And the first thing I say is, I'm going to get in a relationship right now. You know, my first hour out of prison, you know, I'm going to get in a relationship, you know. And he was like, why? Relationship with yourself first. Let's go through these steps, you know. So what happened to me is that I got a chance to get a chance to actually know myself, you know. And I always refer back to my experience, because it's become my greatest asset. When I sat in prison in the 8x6 concrete cell for 12 months, I got a chance to really, really know myself. And I always refer back to that, because it's like, okay, if I go back in the yard, the same thing's going to happen again, and I'm going to reinvent the wheel. But now I have a solution to all that right there. I have a phone list. I got friends that who become my closest confidants that I call and ask for advice. I get a chance to see friends that I grew up with and out there on the streets, and actually running to them 25 years later in the rooms of recovery and saying, wow, you went one way, I went the other. But we end up in the same place, because why? He suffers from greatly deeply ingrained negative thoughts. You know, I get a chance to go to meetings where people that you see on television and people that live on Skid Row come together. Who does this? Who does this? Who wants to help somebody with deeply ingrained negative thoughts? Who wants to give a man experience who's raising a daughter, and I'm getting ready to raise some? You know, and you know, only thing it costs is the desire to stay sober, the willingness to remain sober. You know, this is a blessing. You know, it's very, very scary when you're first new, because when I was new, I did not know what to do. I had to be around men, and what my sponsor told me was, he said, DJ, I'm going to think for you for 12 months. Your best ideas land you in prison. So I'm going to think for you for 12 months. Anything that you think about, you run it across me, because your thinker is broken. And I guarantee, if you let me think for you for 12 months, your life will be different. You know? Okay. I'll give it a shot. I'll give him a month. If I let him think for me, my life don't get better in a month, I'm shaking him. You know? Everything is like, everything that my sponsor told me came to pass. You know, when I had 18 months, I'm going through some stuff. He said, apply the principles. Let's go through his experiences. That's why I always like to talk about my hummingbird. You know, you have to be persistent. Employment, education. You have to support yourself through your own contribution. So after that, when I, you know, like I said, I was making amends. And my family, I've done so much damage, created so much wreckage that my family actually were sitting. I said it so many times. It's going to be different this time, Mom. It's going to be different this time. You know, because all the time they're always looking at me and saying, you've always been like this. You're never going to change. You're just like them other dudes. You know. And my response was, I'm running with the wrong crowd. I was the leader of the wrong crowd. You know, you hang around me, we going, you know, we gonna come up with some ideas that's gonna put us away. You know, but this is the kind of stuff that my family was my worst critics. And, you know, and it took action. Not more words, but it took action for my family to say, something's different. Something is different. I got this minivan of men coming to pick me up, take me to meetings, you know? And my family's sitting there going, we hate them. See, I didn't understand why my family did not like you guys. And my sponsor says, more will be revealed. Let's go through this book. Let's go through this book. My family despised you because you guys did for me what they could not do. And I just met you. You know what I mean? I just met you. And my family's like, oh, I hate them people in the minivan. You know? But when I realized, when we went through the book, what happened was, there's a chapter called To the Wives. And when I read that part, To the Wives, when the wife tried her best, when the wife called the job and told the employer that he's sick today, you know, he's sick today, he can't make it today. And when I read in the chapter To the Wives, when the wives made up every excuse for the husband, and then all of a sudden the husband runs into this group of people. And just like that, it changed. Everything changed after that. And how the wife despised you. Because you guys did for him what she tried to do for many, many years. And that's why I understood why my family hated you guys. But now my family loves you guys. Because you guys gave her another son. You guys gave her, you know, my sister's their brother, you know. But I had to do the work, though. I had to be willing to do the work. And not just do the song and dance and go through these steps. I had to really, really dig deep down, you know. You know what the scariest part for me is? I am scared to death of standing at the defendant's table. If I stop doing this work, I will be a defendant once again. I will stand among people I don't know who are my peers, who are called my peers, and you guys will hand down a sentence to me once again. I cannot let that happen. I am one drink away from that happening once again. I am one drink away from losing my life. I'm one drink away from losing my wife. I'm one drink away from everything that's good. I'm grateful for you guys. So this is what happened to me is that the fact of the matter is I'm looking for love in all the wrong places. So basically, you know, my father, you know, he abandoned me, you know. Hey, it's okay, you know, in poverty, grew up in poverty. So therefore, I gave my life, my will to the care of the streets. the care of my neighborhood, to the care of my homeboys, and from there I progressed and I grew and I got kind of good at what I was doing. But then from there, what happened from there is that I gave them a bunch of contraband, and from there they got arrested and I pled guilty to a 20-year prison sentence. Now the funny thing about it is that I forgot to tell you before is that on February 6th I got arrested. I got arrested on February 6th, 1988. I got arrested on February 6, 1990. I got arrested on February 6 twice in 2 different years. And the second time was the biggest sentence ever I've ever received. You know, and from there, like I said, my alcoholism progressed. I did a lot of time, a lot of different prisons. And it's a funny little story that about two, 3 years ago, I was in Las Vegas, and I'm walking down the strip, and One of my homeboys I was in the pen with, I'm walking down the street and he's like, hey, Ghost, because that's my street name, they used to call me Ghost. I'm like, what's up, dog? He's like, man, what you doing in Las Vegas? I said, you know, I'm here vacationing, you know, hanging loose, you know, watching some shows and stuff like that. And he was like, man, at the time, I was with some friends and stuff, and he's like, man, the last time I saw you, man, we was in USP Florence, and you was wrestling with the prison guards, and you ran out the unit with that jug of wine, trying to down it, and you're running to the prison yard, and they're chasing you, and you got wine all over your shirt, and you stop and you sit back and you cause a scene in the penitentiary, and you just drank that wine down, and it's running all over you. He said, man, that was the last time I saw you, man, you was insane. And I said, yeah, man. Yeah, he said, man, so I get off work at so-and-so, man, let's go have a drink. And I'm like, I don't drink no more, dog. And he was like, not nothing? I said, not nothing, man, I don't drink nothing. He said, not even a sip? I said, not even a sip. He said, man, what you drink now? I said, like, Arnold Palmer's, you know, Pellegrino, sparkling water, you know, stuff like that, you know, with a twist of lime, with no ice. And he was like, man, what happened? I said, dog, I'm an alcoholic. He said, no, you were just weak. I said, no, I'm an alcoholic. He said, man, you on Facebook? I'm like, yeah. And so we're in contact now, and he says, man, please don't take another drink no more. You're being useful from the things that you're doing. You're living an amazing life. So we're in contact now, you know. So it's like totally insane. So, you know, this prison, you know, I know some of you guys might not have ever been to prison, but I know you guys were in the prisons of your own making, you know, from abusive, toxic relationships, you know, jobs, you know, whatever it might be, you know. And if you were like me, I know you did the same thing I was doing. You were numbing yourself out and you were medicating yourself until we began to drink by ourselves, like I did. I would not drink with you anymore. Bring your own. You know, this is how my life has turned out. I wouldn't do any of that. You know, and from there, there's some other stories that go along with this, but it's the fact of the matter is that I did not know that there was a solution to this dis-ease that I felt. Didn't know there's a solution until how I looked at life, and how I can't put that first one down until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you guys told me that I'm just like you. We have similar experiences, and what makes me an alcoholic is the fact that when I declare that when I declare that I would never take another drink again, and then something happens, good or bad, I put that first one in me, and the phenomenon of craving comes back 100-fold, and therefore I lose stuff. See, my family don't understand this kind of stuff. My family don't understand this, you know, about the limitlessness that I feel. When I put that first one in me, you know, that I will run off and I won't hear from me for a couple of days. You know, or what happened to me, while I was telling a couple of guys outside that I wanted to live in Mexico because they had no laws there, you know, and the stuff that I was doing, that it was like in the area I lived in, there were no laws. We can run, it's like the Wild West. And you can walk around with pistols and, you know, and drink and do anything you want to do, you know, and that's how I got turned out on tequila. And, but the mortality rate was like 35. The average man would die at 35 from gunfire or from alcoholism, you know. And then one day, this is the kind of stuff that we talk about. I have an uncle who died of this disease. I never knew the ugliness of cirrhosis of the liver. Never knew the ugliness of it, of how the liver blows up. And I remember as a kid that, you know, he was like, here, drink this. You know, that's what men do. This is what I was taught, you know. But what it's done is taken me so far down a rabbit hole that I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. There was one day that, you know, when I drink, I kind of think stupid things. I was at home one day. I have everything that a retired man has at the time, and I was only 18 at the time. And I mean, I'm looking around my house and saying, man, this is not enough. I need to get more money. I need more women. I need more things. Then all of a sudden, is something in my mind said, you're in pain. You need to end it. So what happened for me was I'm sitting there walking around my house in my robe, you know, partying by myself with a bottle of gin. And what happened was I found myself in the bathroom, in the bathtub, with my pistol, the tub full of water. And I just felt so much pain right here that I didn't know what to do. I got tired of doing what I was doing. I did not like doing what I was doing. You know, but this is the only thing that I know. I got tired of, you know, feeling how I felt. And when I drank, I started having insane thoughts. I was about to make the ultimate sacrifice. And the reason why I went into the bathtub and I turned the water on and I sat right there with a bottle in hand and pistol right here and going like this. And all I gotta do is release the hammer and the pain will be over. But the only reason why I didn't do it is that I could not kill my mother's only son. I was gonna kill my mother's only son because this disease takes me there. I had almost $500,000 in cash at my house, but it wasn't enough. I had all the toys. You know, ZR1s and Porsches, and I had everything, all this stuff, but it wasn't enough. I was in pain, didn't know that there was a solution, and I was about to make the ultimate sacrifice, but I could not kill my mother's only son. But you know what? What happened for me, God did for me what I could not do for myself. God gave me a 20-year prison sentence. And said, at the 16th year of your prison sentence, I'm going to send some people. I'm going to put you right here at this particular time, and you're going to see these people come by. And when I saw these people come by, the lady, her name is Liz, she was carrying a pink box, and I ain't had a donut in 16 years. And I said, man, there's got to be donuts in that box. And I followed them upstairs, and I said, what's this? She says, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, no, thank you. And she said, would you like a donut, young man? And I looked into the box and said, hell yes, I would like a donut. And I sat there, and this 70-year-old white woman, who's a grandmother, I'm a gangster, and, you know, she told me her life story. She told the guys in the room her life story, and I was struck. Something happened in that room right there. And she said, the first thing I had to do, young man, was internalize step one, that I am powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. That's two parts. Two parts. My life is, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. And this woman told me her life story. She told me that there's a solution. She said, in order for you to maintain your recovery, you're going to have to internalize the step one, that it's not just with alcohol, it's people, places, things, circumstances, and situations that you have to be powerless over and accept, you know. I did not know this, It's the only thing I know I do is lash out, because that's what you guys taught me in the streets. You guys taught me how, not how to live, you taught me how to survive. You know, be that top dog. Be the big dog on the yard. You know, have your power and influence. But I did not know this. And then I had to find a God, my own understanding. But then, here we go. Now, I got to make a decision now to turn my life and my will over to the care of God's understanding. A God that I did not believe in at one time. But every time I go to meetings, I look around and I see you guys and say, there's got to be a God. Because, you know, Nick will say something about the way his life might have been and where he took it. I identify with that. And all of a sudden, you tell me how your life is now because you turned your life and will to a care of God, you understood him. You know, you can tell me something too about your life, and I can sit back, sit in your chair, and while you're behind the podium, and you can tell me what happened when you develop a life, you develop a relationship, and you made the decision to turn your life and will over to a care of God, you understood him. The way you understood him, not the way your mother understands him. And you let him control, you know, I'm in the driver's seat, and your life become manageable, and it's good, you know. I want that. And then all of a sudden, hold on now I got secrets now. I got defects in my character, you know. I got all this stuff and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I had a big, big resentment against my co-defendants. Against my homeboys, the ones that point the finger at and say, that's him right there in the gray suit right there, you know. He's the one you want, not me. See, this program recovery taught me how to accept the ugly side of the game, just as I accept the pretty side of the game and my part in it. And this is the crazy thing about it was, about 4 months ago, I'm in Santa Monica, California, and I'm walking down the 3rd Street promenade, and I had some black glasses on, so every time I walk with black glasses and a black baseball hat, people always call me Ice-T, you know? So I'm walking down the promenade, and you know, like, oh, that's Ice-T right there. I'm like, no, I'm not, you know? Hey, Ice, can I take a picture with you? I'm like, I'm not Ice-T, but I'll take a picture with you, you know? You know, ain't gonna be worth nothing. You know, so I'm walking down the promenade and I see this dude and his wife, and this guy and his girlfriend, and they're looking at me. And they stop, and I look at him, I'm saying, no, I'm not. And I just look. And all of a sudden, these deeply ingrained negative feelings and thoughts pop up unexpectedly. It's one of my co-defendants. What does DJ look like? He's right there. Unexpectedly. Now, I got over 7 years of sobriety. I put this stuff down on my fourth step. Did I expect to see them over again? Nope. So I'm walking in the promenade. I got my MacBook in my hand. And I'm walking. And I look up and I'm just looking. And I put my thug stare, you know. I'm looking at him, and he's looking back at me, and his girl's going, that's him. They start backing up. Every cell of my being started vibrating. I started getting shaky. That's what happens when you're getting ready to fight. The limbic region of your brain tells you fight or flight. I hated this man. This man groomed me and turned me in. I knew it was the ugly side of the game. But this is where the program kicks in. Do you know how a thunderstorm will come in and knock all the power out for a second? But then that generator kicks back on and restores power? Well, I'm shivering, I'm shaking, and I don't know what to do. My wife is only 3 blocks away at her job, and I'm shaking like a leaf. You know, and all of a sudden, the power kicks back on. That's God. That's the tools that you guys have given me. The tools kick back in just like that from my experience. And I walked up to him. What's up, homie? Like, what's up? What's up, dog? I said, wow. He was like, man, I'm sorry. And I said, don't even trip. I said, thank you. I said, you were the catalyst for my change. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have the life I have right now. I made a conscious decision to do what you told me to do. You made a conscious decision out of fear, because you did not want to go to jail for 20 years. So you turned me in. My life is amazing. What is your wife's name? How you doing? Thank you. Peace. Have a great day. And I walked off. I missed my appointment because I went around the corner where nobody was, pulled my hat down, and cried. Because my ego tells me, this dude betrayed you. But my experience tells me, when that light cuts off, when I lose power, and then that generator kicks back on and raises me back up and restores power, that I don't have to act like that anymore. Be grateful for what the life you live now. He is part of your change. He helped put you in that prison because of his testimony and also the choice and decision that you make, which I accept responsibility for. But that prison became my cocoon. And I was in there growing, waiting for the people of Alcoholics Anonymous to come in and to carry the solution of change. Powerful, profound. Very powerful and profound. I talk about some of these things because it gets me. It gets me emotional. And I want to tell the newcomer, let's not hold those resentments any longer. It'll keep us cut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Because hopefully that this experience that I shared with you today, you will take that home with you. Put that in the memory bank. And whatever happens in the future, there's some things that you're going to go through in life. And something similar might happen to you, that you will act the same way I behaved. Walk around the corner, pull your head down, and cry, and say it's okay. You know, this is what you guys have given me. I've been shot. I got bullet holes in my body. You know, and I sit back and say, why me? Why did I pull through this? Well, my homeboy got shot in the back of the head, and we're only 15 years old, and I get shot in the shoulder. Why did I do this? Why am I different? Why me, God? You know? It's pretty insane. But I think about it that my experience can possibly help other people. Even if you never gang bang, even if you never been to prison, we've all have similar stories. This broke brain of mine takes me to places where I don't want to be, you know, the prisons of my own making, you know, the family thing, you know what? I'm the only male member of my family that's sober. You know, my grandmother passed. She had a stroke on Thanksgiving and died 2 days later, and she got a chance to see me sober. You know, I take my wife down there to go see my grandmother. You know, and it was so funny that she was like, it's my grandmother's voice. She said, baby, I am so proud of you, baby. I'm like, thank you, grandma. You know, here goes some fruit for you. And she was like, I knew that you're going to do something good with your life. I said, thank you, grandma. I appreciate that. What can I do for you? And she's like, you just keep doing what you're doing. I am so proud of you. And hopefully your cousins and your uncles will see that they can do it too. They call me the head of my family. I didn't want that, but that's responsibility I've taken to be that example. So profound and so powerful that I get a chance to do this kind of stuff. You know, remember what we said about in the 12 steps is that whole families be reassembled. You know, our lives will fill with meaning and purpose. I am another example. I'm just another example that this program works if we work it. It's powerful. It's profound. And then we get a chance to be creative and do things that are hidden talents that were bone marrow deep are actually get a chance to come out, and people get a chance to, you know, see some of the things that you've done and say, wow, I identify, you know. Very, very profound, very, very powerful, you know. So it's, again, it's being active in our own recovery, you know, and developing a strong desire to serve other people. You know, a newcomer asked me, he said, what do you mean by being active in your own recovery? Being active in my own recovery is going to meetings, working with other people, and being a service. That's being active in my own recovery. That guarantees me a seat tomorrow. That guarantees me a seat. Active in my own recovery, my own rescue. I have to rescue myself. And through my example, what's going to happen is other people going to say, I want what you got. I want what you got. I want what you have. I want the life that you live. You know, I got out of prison with absolutely nothing. Nothing. But I had the desire and will to say, okay, I want you to think for me. I'm going to surrender, you know, I'm going to give you my sovereignty. And you think for me, and we'll see how this life is going to be. As long as I am active in my own rescue, you're going to tell me, you're going to go out, man, I used to hate you people when I first got out also, because you guys wouldn't say anything to me. And my sponsor said, you ain't got no social skills, man. What you need to do is, as a matter of fact, he said, I want you to stand by the door right there, and everybody comes to that door, I want you to say, welcome, your name is DJ, you're an alcoholic, okay? Now, this is at a convention, my first convention. I stood at the door and welcomed over 4,000 people. How you doing, DJ Alcoholic? I was like, can I just get a sign and go like this, you know? It was so many people, you know? And so, you know, this is the kind of things that I got a chance to do. So it's being active in my own rescue. It's developing a strong desire to serve other people. It's doing the steps, and it's being selfishly, giving yourself in selfish surrender to service other people. And I guarantee it, if newcomers, if you let somebody else who does the work think for you for 12 months, I guarantee it, your life will be totally different. You'll be totally, totally different. Because we're going to talk about fears, we're going to talk about everything. And then I guarantee if you really, really do this, you know, your life going to be amazing. And your past will become your greatest asset. My past has become my greatest asset. How is that possible? You showed me what to do. You showed me what to do. So to newcomers, I want to let you know, I want you to remember this phrase, and I want you to give it away to another newcomer. I want you to remember this phrase, come as you are, but don't leave as you came. And if this is your first meeting you've ever been to, I want to say welcome. We have been waiting for you. My name is DJ, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.